Hello, everyone. I am so excited to see you today. Happy Monday. It is Monday, right? My parents are visiting, so my days are just completely thrown off. I'm like cooking more than usual. Everything's crazy, but I'm glad to have them. So welcome, brand new week. I've got a fantastic show lined up for you today. Lots of fun topics. So here's what I did over the weekend. I watched a bunch of content, and what I really try to zero in on is content from people who see the world a little bit differently from me. Sometimes I'll pull stuff where I say, oh, this is amazing. I agree with this and we need to show this because they're saying it even better than I do. But more often than not, I'm trying to pull apart points where I think someone's getting it wrong or missing something. So I listened to some content from Hunter Avalon. I don't know if you know who he is, but I'm going to be reacting to some of that. Content from Fresh and Fit, from Drew Afualo, from Andrew Tate. We're going to be responding to all of that stuff. What are our topics today? Masculinity, femininity, obesity. Oh, yeah. The system. The Matrix. Some believe it doesn't exist. I'm going to tell you that it does exist. I'm going to tell you who makes up the Matrix, and I'm going to tell you how they are trying to wreck you, particularly young men. But all of you, in fact, are on the chopping block, as we should say. Sexual discipline is something that's talked about a lot when it comes to men in particular. Is it a trait that women admire and women seek out? Is it a valuable trait? Is it an important trait? We're going to dig into that. Body count, a little bit of a different angle on body count I want to do today. And the male versus female experience on dating apps, which I think is really important. How are men doing in that space? How are women doing in that space? And why? And what does that mean for the dating marketplace in totality? So that is what we have in store. I'm going to dig in pretty deep here on the system. And I'm going to give you some examples from the last 2 years that I think you may or may not remember, may or may not know. So that's what we're doing. I want to remind you all, hit that subscribe button, hit that like button. Folks in the chat, super chats will be read. Tyler is here today. Yay! He's going to be getting to your chat. So if you put a super chat in there, just hold on tight. I'm going to try to check back in as much as possible with you. So let's get started. Okay, Hunter Avalon did a video called Fresh and Fit Takedown, which immediately interested me. I checked it out, and he has quite a bit of commentary on different aspects of what Myron in particular has said, in addition to commentary about Tristan Tate, Andrew Tate's brother, and some stuff that he threw out there when it comes to the system. Let's start playing that. This is going to be stop and go. I'm going to get on in there. There's your video. That's him in the corner, and that's Tristan. Okay, let's go.
Of men is very important if you want to have a society where you can easily control everybody. Yeah. I think it's the reason why a certain brother of mine was deleted.
So getting rid of masculinity is easy for controlling society. Right off the bat, he is implying that something or someone or some entity or cabal is working together to get rid of masculinity so they can control the masses.
Yeah, masculinity, okay, so we're going to pause that. So he's not implying it, by the way, Tristan. He's stating it outright, and he's 100% correct. You would have to live in a complete fog. Maybe it's a liberal fog. I don't know. Maybe they just don't see clear. You know those impressionist paintings? You know those ones in the museum that you go up to? From afar, it just looks like a blur. I'm sorry. From afar, it looks beautiful, I should say. And then you go up close, and it's a complete blur. I don't know. Maybe these liberals are living in a fog. So let me remind you, who is the Matrix? Who is the system? Who are those people that are trying to take you out? Well, let's see. We've got a little list here. The globalists, we know that. The elites, big government, big pharma, the World Economic Forum. You could go on and on. Who else do we have? Mainstream media, which is funded by big pharma. We talk about all that all the time. There is absolutely a group at the top. The World Economic Forum is a big one, a big player in all of that. Hi, Bill Gates. You're out there too. Maybe you're listening. Maybe you can learn something. All of those people have a partnership. That's real. That's happening. Has this guy, Hunter Avalon, never heard of central bank digital currencies and why that's scary to people? That the government, one big, united, strong, all-powerful globalist government could come in and could decide what you should and shouldn't be purchasing and allow you to make certain purchases and not others. So maybe they decide that you've done something that doesn't work for them. You have some pattern of behavior they don't like, and suddenly you go to book a flight and you can't do it. No one follows the communist Chinese and what's going on over there. That's what's happening. That's already happening in China. It's called the Chinese social credit system. And it happens all the time where there's some history or pattern of behavior that somebody has in that society. That's what communism looks like, right? The elite get to do whatever they want and everybody else doesn't. That exists, that social credit system, where they will just prevent individuals from living freely. That is not a free society. So you have some moral issue, according to the Chinese government, right? The communist government decides, oh, we're going to have a moral checklist here. And this person over here, they don't make the mark. For whatever reason, they've done something we don't like. So they're not going to be able to travel right now. Penalty, nope, you can't do it. That's happening already. So when you talk about a central bank digital currency, you talk about unifying that power, that control at the top. That's, you know, among the elite, globalist, whatever you want to call it. And the fear, of course, is that the average Joe, the average guy, no longer gets to exercise his or her own individual personal freedom. The reason that conversation became so powerful over the last couple of years was because many believed, I'm one of them, that the vaccine passports were a testing ground for all of that. Would it be palatable to people to have to show a vaccine passport every time they walked into a restaurant, a cafe, whatnot? And what was fascinating to me was how many people just said, okay, I'll do that. Like the hunger for freedom in the supposed land of the free had vanished, and suddenly we were a nation of terrified robots. So that testing ground actually for the global elites went quite well. They wanted to see what they could get away with and what they could get people to do and how much of people's individual freedom and sovereignty they could get them to give up just by being afraid. And look how far they got. So what is the goal of these institutions? Again, the globalists, World Economic Forum, big government, big pharma, big media, run by big pharma, big tech is another one I forgot the first time around. Throw them in there. What is the goal? So the goal is to weaken society, as I've said, to create a nation of dependent people. They want you less self-sufficient, less autonomous, less able to run your own life, and less wanting, by the way, to run your own life. They want you sitting there saying the government, these institutions know better about my health and my well-being than I do. So you're just ready to just hand it all over to them. They want to be able to tell women, you don't need a man, right? And to tell men that their masculinity is toxic, because ultimately, remember, and I cannot stress this enough, the goal is to get women and men to be less desirable to each other, less likely to form that union, because that union provides stability in the family and that nuclear family. Without that stability, you become more reliant on the state and more willing to become a puppet of the state. That is the goal. That's what they want. They want to say, again, we talked about the masculinity toxic. I did all that already. I got my notes here, but I want to make sure I follow them all. So to sum up to Hunter Avalon, he's right. Tristan is right. What he's talking about is not only real and happening, but you'd have to be living in a fog to not recognize that there was a goal here of trying to see how much the average citizen in the United States of America, the supposed land of the free, could be puppeteered by a big, all-powerful daddy government. And they got real far. So the next time pandemic 2.0 rolls around, just wait and see what happens. Let's continue playing.
In and of itself is a social construct. We as a society have determined what behavior we are going to consider masculine and what we aren't. Masculinity changing is not the result of some evil cabal or some woke elites or whatever trying to erode the masculinity.
Okay.
That's not how this works.
So that's ridiculous. Come on, man. Listen, I'm willing to give you an inch because liberals tend to do live in that fog, but come on. First of all, masculinity is not exclusively a social construct. Now, are the way that we define ourselves and the way society defines femininity and masculinity by way of magazines, by way of media, by way of television, does that play a role in human behavior? Sure. Absolutely. Because we are products in some respect of our society, of our upbringing, of what's around us, of what media has decided is acceptable and not acceptable, because much of society will mimic what those institutions tell you is desirable. However, the implication here that masculinity and femininity and the traits that are represented by those things are not intrinsic in some way to men and to women is utterly ridiculous. That is the school of ideology that has a really hard time saying men and women are different, because they have a really hard time swallowing that there are certain traits, certain things about a man, certain things about a woman that are intrinsic to a man and to a woman. For example, if you asked me if I believed it was a natural instinct, not societally imposed, a natural instinct for a man to protect and to provide? I would say absolutely. If you ask me if it was a natural instinct, a natural tendency, not societally imposed, for a woman to be nurturing, I would say 110%. So let me ask you this. If you put 10 men and 10 women and 10 children on a desert island, say you picked them up out of Miami, that's where we are, we're South Florida. So let's say pick them up out of South Florida, you put them on a desert island, and there's nothing, right? There's no food, there's no water, there's nothing. Tell me what would happen to those individuals naturally. Do you think that the women would instinctively be the hunters and gatherers? Do you think that the women would instinctively, in the majority of cases, of course there's going to be outliers, in the majority of cases, will the women be the ones building the houses? Will they be the ones going out and seeking the food? Will the guys naturally be the ones that immediately begin to nurture those children and assure them that everything's okay and see what? No, no. You will have your hunter and gatherer guys that will automatically, something will flicker off in them and they will take on that role instinctively. You will have your women who will instinctively rush over to those children and make sure they're okay and be the ones to take that stuff that the guys go out and hunt and gather and bring home and prepare it. And there are just natural tendencies. And by the way, I don't care if you put 10 feminized men and 10 boss babes on the island, it's still going to play out that way. It's still going to play out that way because a lot of these societal structures that are, you know, oh, well, I see in the media that I'm a boss babe and that's what I want to be. All of that stuff, including telling men that they're toxic and your masculinity is toxic and then they deflate, all of that stuff sheds away when privilege sheds away. And when you are in your most bare of circumstances, when you are in survival mode, you watch what happens. I guarantee you those guys will instantly and instinctively become the protectors on that desert island. So you can't ignore that. You can blame social construct and say, oh, it's all, you know, we're all victims of what society tells us we're supposed to be. And by the way, I'm not saying that society doesn't work really hard in 2022 to tell women not to be nurturing and to downplay that instinctive quality and to tell men not to be protectors and to downplay that. They want that stuff weeded out again because the goal is to make each less attractive to the other because societal decay happens when that union, that stable family union, doesn't form. So I'm not saying that 2022 society, and by society again, let's trace back. I mean, big media. I mean, big government. I mean, all those institutions that have a vested interest in you being less healthy and less happy. I'm not saying there's not a goal there, but they are not going to be able to strip away what is intrinsic and what is natural and what is biologically driven in that man and that woman, no matter how hard they try. Okay, let's continue with this commentary.
Who is doing this and who's benefiting and who's trying to take over society by getting rid of the big masculine guys?
Why a certain brother of mine was deleted everywhere on social media because he tries to tell young men to live in a way that's very true to male nature and very masculine, but also...
So he's obviously talking about Andrew Tate. This guy sounds kind of like Andrew Tate. It's kind of creepy. But no, Andrew Tate wasn't.
First of all, how dumb is that? What a dumb comment. It's his brother, dude. Like, it's his brother. They sound alike. They've, like, raised in the same house, same family. So he looks kind of like, it's his brother. It's not like some guy out there who, like, was like, I'm going to be the next Andrew Tate. And he, like, put on a little costume. And believe me, those guys exist, too. They're out there. It's his brother, dude. But what's interesting to me about this also is, like, I would ask Hunter Avalon, and by the way, we're reaching out to Hunter. I would love to have him on the show and have this debate with him in person. We'll see if he wants to come. He's more than welcome. But have you never turned on, like, a TV show in the modern age? Television show, a movie, read a magazine. That, like, idiot guy character is everywhere, right? The dumb guy. He's a dad. He's got a beer gut. he's like, you know, happy wife, happy life. Like the woman makes all the rules in the house. He's trying to like sneak a cupcake on the side. In that movie, This Is 40, he's like trying to get the cupcake. His wife is like, put it out in the garbage. He goes out. He's trying to like eat it before he has to throw it away because the boss wife said, no, 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 you can't have a cupcake. The idiot guy is everywhere. Total like incompetent. Like if my wife didn't organize this house, everything would be a mess. I'm kind of useless. Come on. So you're trying to tell me that masculinity isn't being downplayed in society and that they don't want you to think that's your typical guy? Come on. It's everywhere you go that the guys that are masculine and proud of their masculinity, they're being labeled a misogynist. They're being labeled like they don't care about women. And what's being elevated is this character of a guy that's a total moron on television and you wouldn't trust to protect you at all. In fact, in many cases in these movies and television shows, you would trust the woman because the female characters are far more competent than the men, and they're far more in shape oftentimes, and they're far more together. That is by design that they show you those movies and that stuff. That is by design. That is society trying to tell you, oh, that's what it means to be masculine. Don't worry, guys. You can just sit back, shrink back, let the woman run the show. You're better for it anyway because you're kind of a big, dumb guy. You can't do it. You're a big, dumb, fat guy. They're trying really hard to tell guys that that's who they are, because how deeply threatening to the system would it be if that guy got in shape, got his shit together, was masculine, and when shit came around that didn't work, that guy stood up and said to society at large, to the global elites, that's not going to work for me, and stood up for his family, his community. So it's kind of like, again, like, do you live in a fog? Maybe it's voluntary living in a fog. I don't know. Maybe they prefer it that way. You know? I don't know. All right, let's keep going.
Oh, that's next one.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Love and hugs over here. No, it was because, like what you said, he told them to live by their masculine nature, which included talking about how women are property.
Okay. Isn't necessarily, and he goes on, they go down the same. The this is silly, right? He goes down the same. We talked about that property stuff. We broke that down in the Piers Morgan interview. If you want to have a full, hear the full discussion on that, go back to my interview, by the way, where I break down Andrew Tate and Piers Morgan, where he discusses the notion of property. Let's go to 520 on that. I think it's the same clip, but yeah. Go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
They want malleable slaves paying
the people in charge of the world. This is what I'm talking about, by the way, where there are so many little signals to the JQ. Sometimes they just go right past you. You don't even notice it, but like the people in charge of the world. What does that mean?
Okay. Who is so, in charge? Again, so funny to me how ignorant and just how like willingly ignorant some people can be about this stuff. It's like they don't want to know because it's so much easier to just walk through life and be like, what do I need to do, Big Daddy government? Do I need to get another booster shot? Okay, I'll get another booster shot. Don't worry. Do I need to lock down my business again because you said it was best? Okay, I'm going to do that. Should I eat some bugs for lunch? Okay, don't worry. Do you have cockroaches or ants? Oh, you're going to pick? Okay. I mean, these people, this is what... There is a big bulk of society that's just going to do that no matter what gets handed to them. They're going to just chew it up and swallow it and be, oh, I have to smile about it. I was told this is the new world order. Okay. So the people in charge of the world. Tristan, that's a bit vague, right, from Tristan. But he's right. There are people who are in charge. We just broke it down for you. So I want to share something with you for people who don't know. Do you all know what Event 201 was? I love how I ask these questions as if you can respond to me and answer me. Event 201 was a 3.5-hour coronavirus pandemic simulation, they call it. It's called a simulation. And basically, it was top leaders. It was sponsored by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It was sponsored by the World Economic Forum. And top leaders in those communities, right? You had a representative from, I believe it was Johnson & Johnson. You have big pharma reps that were there, World Economic Forum reps from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, all there. Okay. And it was publicly known. It was tweeted about at the time. This event happened in October of 2019. So put yourself in October of 2019. That was right before the COVID-19 pandemic erupted. Okay. So what happened at that simulation? What happened is that they played out what would happen if a coronavirus pandemic hit the world. Now, they played out every single detail of what would happen, from the lockdowns to the masking to what would happen in that first year where a vaccine wasn't available, what would happen if a vaccine became available. And it was interesting. People should go and just watch what happened at the event, make your own decisions. There's some tweets that came out at the time from people who were at the event. And this is all important. This is from Andrew Pecos, who was there attending Event 201, Exercise on Pandemic Preparedness at the Pierre Hotel. The fictional virus causing the outbreak and the hotel believes in using viruses in their carpets. So that's interesting to me. That's the virus that they were talking about. Like, what if this virus hit the world? What would we do about it? We would have to lock people down, masking. How would we encourage vaccination? All of this stuff. By the way, most of the people who were in attendance at Event 201, I think it's like 7 out of 10, a high percentage of people who were there, percentage wise, are people who would financially benefit from a pandemic. Financially benefit. Big pharma reps, people who would financially benefit from the pandemic measures that were instituted as a result. So you see that image of the little virus, and I said to myself, oh, that looks familiar. Why? So what do they tell us that COVID-19 looks like? I pulled it up. I said, I wonder what's going on here. And I pulled up a little image, Tyler, if you can go. Well, that kind of looks like that little doll, doesn't it, that was given out in October of 2019 at Event 201. That's so weird, isn't it, everyone? Interestingly enough, there it says Event 201 right there.
Well, look at the tag.
Look at the tag.
That is the coronavirus right there on the tag of the doll.
So, in other words, all of these people, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the World Economic Forum, reps from Big Farm, they're all there, and they're doing this simulation of a coronavirus outbreak and what would happen, all of whom stand to benefit in some way from the approach that's being drawn out in the simulation, which is the culmination of that is, by the way, a vaccine from Big Pharma that comes in. And all of this is discussed, and the virus they're talking about looks like the virus that came out. Well, this is just color me crazy. I can't seem to connect these dots. It's just too much. Okay. So, interestingly enough, the Chinese CDC director was also at the simulation. And some say he would have already known about the outbreak that was happening in China. Huh. Because it was already, October of 2019, it was already happening in China. Chinese CDC director comes and attends this event. Interestingly. Now, what role did the World Economic Forum play in what went, and what the after effects of all this? Well, the World Economic Forum became influential in crafting the Great Reset, became influential in crafting the Build Back Better. And what were those two programs? Those were two programs that would justify a massive expansion of government over individual rights. Lockdowns, masking, mandates, all of that. So why do I bring this up? I'm going to get to this in a second. Actually, I have two more things I want to bring up. Following that simulation, it's important for you to really see how deep this goes. When we talk about the system and we talk about the matrix, don't you dare let some guy on the internet say, what people in charge? Honey, stop. Just stop. So this came out from one of the attendees as a series of recommendations that were given when people emerged from this Event 201. This is from Dr. Emily Ricotta, who was there. Will anti-vax sentiment be sustained through a pandemic? If a viable vaccine is produced, will we need to combat this group of disinformation? Or will people be too frantic not to die to eschew the vaccine? So at Event 201, they're also talking about this idea of misinformation and disinformation and how to shut down people who may be a little skeptical of what's going on, who may want to ask questions, who may not want to get the experimental vaccine that comes out during this time period. Well, color me crazy again, but last I checked, there was a campaign that big tech and big pharma and the Biden administration all were in on, and the World Economic Forum, they were all talking about silencing that disinformation from skeptics. So what's really interesting to me is all these head honchos gathered in a room just before a major outbreak of a pandemic. They gathered in a room and they talked about what might happen, and they talked about all of this stuff, and it played out just like that. Isn't that crazy? I can't make a conclusion. It's just too hard to connect the dots, but it's worth talking about, thinking about. So to get back to Hunter Avalon, when he talks about people who run the world, yes, sir. There are people who run the world. And those are the same people, by the way, who benefited during a pandemic. Those are the same people who crippled individuals who dared to contradict what they were saying and were censored, were thrown off Instagram, were thrown off Twitter, were thrown off social, lost their jobs. And it's the same people who are invested in the nonsensical storyline of toxic masculinity to weaken, by the way, the very men in society, including, by the way, men in the military, who would stand up to this type of madness. Because we're supposed to be defending the land of the free. And if we can cripple those guys, those masculine men, who instinctively, by virtue of intrinsically what it means to be a man, aren't going to be stampeded by the World Economic Forum or, you know, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. If we can cripple them, then guess who wins? The powers that be. So it's incredibly naive to not acknowledge that what Tristan Tate was saying at the start of that clip is 100% true. Now, maybe he didn't do the deep dive like I just did, but his instinct about what's going on here is right. And the goal will be for every single one of you sitting at home watching this who sees that something fishy's been going on and has a question or two about what's been going on, the goal will be to silence you, because next round, and there will be a next round of this, you mark my words, next round, you're the ones that they're most worried about. They're not worried about everybody who complied in round one. They're worried about those pockets that didn't. Like, how do we make it even harder for those pockets this time around? Maybe we need to scare them a little bit more. Maybe we need to bully them a little bit more. Maybe we need to make it so that those mandates extend a little bit more. What are we going to do, right? And who are they relying on? Who are they relying on? The weak, the obese, right? Because they're going to say, well, I'm even more scared because I'm statistically at greater risk from this virus. They're relying on your weakness. So this nonsense of like, oh, this isn't really happening, don't be afraid to see what you see, okay? Don't be afraid to see what you see. All right. We're going to move on from the Matrix for a moment into reacting to girls who are just telling the truth. By the way, hit that subscribe button, hit that like button. If, by the way, if you like more of these deep dives that I do when it comes to any topic, please let me know. I'm happy to do them on any number of topics. I'm about as afraid of the Matrix as I am of being censored, as in not at all. So let me know what you want to hear about. Tyler, do we keep an eye on those super chats and we'll come to you. Yeah, go ahead.
Omega gave $5. Said social credit started with black people by the Democratic Party. Quote, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black, says Biden. Social destruction solidified this.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know all this stuff that happens, the massive manipulation that happens from the top. It's really remarkable if you sat and like made a list. Sit down and make a list of what went down in the last 2 years and then tell me there's no powers that be. Let's have that talk, okay? Oh, it's a virus, the virus. Yeah, the virus shut down everything? Okay, honey. Mm-hmm. Keep believing what you're told. All right, let's go to 3932. This is important. Let's take a listen.
Give Instagram. You go straight to his Instagram and you see what he got. You see how many followers he got. You see what he got going on. If he ain't got much going on, it's a no. Y'all know that.
Oh, perfect. That's even better. So now not only do we have a bunch of dipshits reinforcing shallow views of women, now we have women reinforcing shallow views of women. That's great. How many women are like, listen, you're a really nice guy. You make a lot of money. You're pretty much everything I've ever looked for in a partner. You're like my ideal man. But then I saw that you only have 2,000 followers on Instagram. Maybe get that number up to like 3 or 4,000 and call me. Does she actually think that's how it works? Listen, bitch, just if you're a fucking shallow loser, doesn't mean that all women are. And it's really unfortunate that you're reinforcing this, honestly, just disgusting view of women to a bunch of...
So let's pause that there. So this is a woman on Fresh and Fit, and basically what she's saying is the truth. She's saying that women will go and check out a guy's Instagram account and judge him based on the number of followers he's got, what he's got going on. We're talking about people who are in the dating marketplace right now, you know, not somebody who's already, you know, got a wife, got a kid, they're out of it. She's right. She's just telling you the truth. She's just saying they will do that. And does this happen? Yes. Women do this. Why do they do it? It's not about the Instagram followers per se, but it's that those Instagram followers are indicative of your status, right? You're a guy who then, do you have a cool business? You got something going on. Are you really good looking? Are you really in shape? What is it about you that has, you know, that following? Assuming you didn't pay for it. We know that happens too. But assuming it's an organic following, right? What's going on there? You know, are you somebody who's desired by other women? We know that's attractive to women. So she's just out there telling the truth. She's just saying, look, women are doing this. Women care about it. So if you're a guy out there and you've got an Instagram, you've got two followers, that's not going to go well for you. You may as well not have one. In fact, delete that thing. It's reality. What's interesting to me, too, about this commentary from Hunter is that Hunter seems really concerned when we start this clip about women who are, you know, speaking ill of other women. He's really concerned about protecting women, it seems. And then you listen to him and he calls her a bitch. He calls her a shallow loser. I love that. That's the way liberals work. I love it because it exposes them. Do I love that he called her a bitch and shallow loser? No, let me clarify. But I love that he exposed himself because he didn't have something substantial to say, so he name called. That's what people do who don't have something of substance. The truth of the matter is that she was being honest, that a guy who is desired by other women, a guy who has some type of status, a guy who's got something going on, he's in shape, you know, he's got a business, he's got something that brought that Instagram following up, is going to be attractive. It's a reality. So you don't have to like it. You don't have to, whatever. You don't have, you can feel however you want to feel about it, but that is the truth. Why are we criminalizing this woman for just telling people that women care about this stuff and being honest about it? I think that's kind of disgusting, honestly, that he went after her for speaking the truth. And listen, ladies, if you don't like the truth, stop behaving that way. Stop caring. But you do care, so own it. And don't hate on a woman for telling the truth. Okay. Body count. This is a segment with Sneeko. I like this one. Let's play this one.
None of you said your body count. If you're able to look at your past and be honest about it, why were you all saying BBLs and I don't say...
Maybe they didn't bring up their body count because they don't view that as being a mistake. As soon as you realize that there's no long-term physical effects of a woman having sex, then it kind of becomes meaningless. At that point, it's like, again, you're insecure. You're the opposite of a Sigma male. And you feel compromised or a little bit insecure over the fact that your partner has previously been with other guys. What's wrong? Are you worried that they had a bigger dick than you? Are you worried that they made more money?
And this is the typical line we see all the time. First of all, Sneeko's right. The women who have the high body count, they don't say it out loud. And we've seen this on video. I have showed you, I think it was, I don't know, remember what show it was, but we showed a bunch of women and one girl says her body count, but she's like hesitant. She even says, I'm like a little embarrassed to say it. They're embarrassed by it. That's why they don't want to share it. They're embarrassed by it because deep down inside, they know it's not good. They know it's not something to be proud of. So they're hesitant to vocalize it. If they were proud of it, if women were proud of that high body count, they would say it out loud. Trust me, when women are proud of something, they vocalize it. They're the first ones to say it. They're embarrassed. That's why they're not saying it. This line he has too, there's no long-term physical effects of a woman having sex, promiscuous sex. He's talking about, what are you talking about? Promiscuous sex leads to pregnancy. Promiscuous sex very often can lead to abortion. These are very grave things that happen to a woman's body in her life as a result of promiscuity. So are we downplaying that now too? Are we downplaying that so that we can turn abortion into something simple? Oh, it's like contraception. Is that where we're at? I know that's where we're at societally, but I just want to articulate it for you so that you remember where we're at. Bottom line is, it is not attractive for a woman's body to be like the Lincoln Tunnel open all night long. It's not. It is not attractive. And she knows it. That's why she's hesitant to vocalize it. Guys not liking that high body count and not liking that promiscuity is totally normal. It has nothing to do with them being insecure themselves about where she's been. They don't like it because they value innocence in women. They value purity in women. They value self-respect in women. They value women who are hesitant to put their bodies out there and who connect sex with emotion. That is it. That's where it ends. It's not about insecurity for men. It's about preference and what they prefer in women. End of story. Not that hard to understand. Okay. Let's look at the next. I think this is a short, and this one is a little bit nuanced. It's about the word submissive. And after we do this one, Tyler, I want to get back over to super chats. We're coming over right after this one, so if you have a question, get on in there now. The word submissive has driven some modern men and modern women insane. I mean, it literally could make their hair go gray. Let's listen to this and catch his reaction.
About independent women, bosses don't get wifed up like that. Men that are bosses want a woman that's submissive and gonna follow their program. There can't be two bosses.
I like how their whole thing is like, become a high value man. I don't know if I can stress this enough, but if you, in order to feel like a high value man, desire a woman who is just submissive and gonna go along with you, then you are not a high value man. Then you are not, even by your own standards, an alpha male. You're a beta's view of an alpha male.
Okay.
Because your
self. So again, this word submissive will drive people nuts. Now, people in the manosphere do define this differently. I have found that there is a distinction from some. So I would, before I even had this conversation about what Myron was saying, I would ask Myron, what do you mean by the word submissive? How does that translate for you to everyday life? Because what I think is a lot of modern young women hear that, and a lot of folks on the left hear that, and they think it's like a woman bowing down, yes, sir, you know, kissing the feet of the man, you know, down on the floor, like not leaving the house unless they're allowed to, not, you know, speaking unless they're spoken to. That is not the dynamic that I believe they are talking about in any respect. Again, remember, these structures they're talking about are consensual. These are not forced. These are not, I'm an employer and you're an employee relationship. It's not a boss and a servant. These are consensual. These are women who enter those structures with men because they're okay with kind of sitting back a little bit. Oftentimes, women who choose these guys who make a lot of money, who are the breadwinners, who, you know, make good, solid decisions for the home, who are together, who have run successful businesses, and who they trust, by the way, they will choose those guys and say, you know what, I'm okay with him kind of being the man of the house and making the decisions. And as long as I feel respected and loved, I'm cool with it. They are opting for that paradigm in many cases. So that's one thing that needs to be understood. I don't think that most marriages work that don't have, they need a collaborative component, right? So I think most marriages do really well when you have a head of household. So he's right. There's got to be somebody that makes the final decision, right? There's got to be somebody who's more in charge. Is this a more palatable way to say it for those in the audience who don't like it? There's got to be someone who is in charge of the larger picture, right? The larger financial picture, the larger picture of how all of the pieces of the puzzle work together. Both people in the marriage are doing something good, bringing something different to the table, doing something unique. So neither is disregarded, but there is someone who's kind of looking at the full picture. What they're talking about, I believe, is a structure where that's the guy. And I think the reason is that I think guys oftentimes will naturally do more of those things. They're more analytical by nature. They just are. They're more, you know, long-term picture. They're more, thinking about finances. They're more organized when it comes to the financial component of things. And I think oftentimes you have women that are very comfortable letting that go. Like, they're like, I don't need to be involved in all of that. I want to be involved in different things that are important to me. Now, does that mean that if there's a big decision about the family to be made, about where the child goes to school or where, you know, the family's going to move or any of that, that it's not collaborative and they don't both sit down at the table and they don't both share their different experience? Of course, there has to be a situation of mutual respect. So this is what I would say to Myron. If you like that structure that you're talking about, and the word submissive comes from a place for you that involves mutual respect, then you have to show that respect, right? You have to, and one of the ways, by the way, that you become a guy that women will trust to be in that position and that women will say, I can lean on him and I trust him to be the head of household, is through your fidelity. It just is. Women really care about that component because it means a lot to them. And remember, I say all the time, those women that throughout their life have really put sex on a high pedestal for them. Like, I'm not going to do it with just anyone. I care about my body. I respect myself. All of that stuff will want a guy they can trust, will want a guy they can lean on, will want a guy that they would trust to be the head of household to make the best decisions for them and their families, and would be comfortable leaning back on a lot of things as long as they feel that they can trust you. And that trust for women is going to be tied to you being loyal and faithful to them. We're going to get more to that in a second. But that word submissive, I think, people read it and they think it's like you're whipping a dog, you know, which you should never do, by the way, either. But you know what I'm saying? That is not what I believe that the guys in this space are talking about, but they should clarify it a little bit more. I know that's a short, but I oftentimes will even watch long form content and I'm like, I'm not getting a hold on how that manifests in a household. So they should be more specific about that. Okay. I want to talk about sexual discipline right now. Let's go to, this is Victoria Duval. We're not going to play the whole thing, but I want to play a portion of it. Let's take a look at that.
My man is not sexually disciplined and he's so immersed in sex and wanting to watch porn and wanting to do this.
A man having sexual discipline is probably one of the most important characteristics that a man can have. Or at the very least, a man being interested in cultivating sexual discipline. Now, what does sexual discipline look like? It looks like a man who doesn't watch porn. It looks like a man who is not begging or thirsty for intimacy from random women or from you. A man who has standards and isn't just going to engage intimately with any woman that throws herself at him. It looks like a man who is interested in creating healthy sexuality with his partner.
So this conversation, I've seen this pop up in a few different locations. And I think some of it is a reaction to what goes on in the manosphere where, and I've tried to have these conversations with multiple guys from that space who've sat here. And a lot of them will say there's a separate set of rules for men and women when it comes to, you know, I want to be a guy and I want to be able to have my wife and multiple other partners, but it's not the same for a woman. And I see that as a big problem area for the red pill community for many reasons. I talked with Rolo about it when it comes to monogamy and how monogamy is a force for stability and community and all of those things. But I think this sexual discipline point is really important because we've talked about how women don't care about a guy's body count. In other words, if I meet you, I'm married, but let's just say hypothetically, I meet you, you have a body count of 20, even 30, honestly, before you meet me, is that going to be a reason why I don't engage? No, it's not. And the vast majority of women will agree that that's not going to be a reason why they don't. However, what is attractive to a woman is that you don't sit and watch porn all day long, that you don't need to constantly be consuming sexual content, that you're not a cheater, and that you are a guy who could cheat. Again, you could cheat because you're desired, because you have those attributes that women desire. You're masculine, you're strong, you're stoic, you're a problem solver, you're someone that a woman can lean on. You feel sturdy, that you feel sturdy. Remember that, that's what women like, a guy who feels sturdy. So you have all of those traits, but you also have a value system that makes you loyal and faithful to your girl. That's what sexual discipline means. It means that you can walk in to a bar, and I say this all the time, girls want a guy who they could send, say you take the vows of monogamy, you get married, you want that guy who you know you could send on a business trip, you could send on a boys' night out, you could send into a bar, a club, any setting, and that guy's going to be desired. Women are going to want him. Women are going to like turn around and do this. It's going to be a lot of that, but you know your man's going to be true to you, and you don't even have to think about it. You don't worry about it. You don't stress about it. That is what sexual discipline means. I also think that even though women don't care about a guy's body count, And even though that's not going to be a body count's high, forget it. I think if you are a guy who is known in your recent past as like, you'll just sleep with anybody, that's not attractive either, right? Like, you're the guy who just, you know, every girl, like your whole circle, before you meet that guy, like your whole circle's kind of been with him. Like, it's, you know, an old school 90s like mini drama. That's not attractive either, because that means you have no standards, right? And even though there is an expectation women have that guys will be a little bit less picky, especially in those early 20s years, it's nice to have some standards, right? It's nice to know that you've kind of had some benchmark, something, right? So again, I can't reiterate this enough. The guy who has a lot of girls throwing themselves at them, but is true to their girl, that is your top G. People talk about the top G, the top G, the top G. One thing about the red pill too, I'll say, that I find problematic in their commentary. And by the way, I should have brought this up to Justin Waller. I didn't. I thought about it in the moment. I even made a note on the side of my page, but sometimes the discussion gets where it needs to go and you forget. This is really important though. Guys in the red pill community, I know Rollo says it's not a community, so whatever. Guys who espouse red pill ideology, the manosphere, all of that stuff, will talk about discipline a lot. They talk about discipline when it comes to their body, working out. They talk about discipline when it comes to the food they eat. They talk about discipline when it comes to their work ethic. They talk about discipline when it comes to charting like a pattern of success financially and otherwise. And that's all very admirable. That, I think, those are components of the manosphere that I think women are really drawn to. But somehow then when they begin to talk about sex, the discipline just goes the route of death, right? And all of a sudden they start saying, well, men are biologically hardwired for promiscuity and societally they've always done that. And the discipline is gone, right? It's almost like, oh, well, we're supposed to spread the seed and we're like animals, so we're just going to do that. And I always say, where did the discipline go? You know, if you are a top G, as we're going to say, your discipline needs to run through and through. So now, if you're not in a relationship and you want to be promiscuous, do what you want. But if you are a disciplined guy by nature, you have to understand that what makes you attractive is that discipline all across the board. So women are deeply attracted to a guy who's disciplined about their work, who's disciplined about their success, who's disciplined about what they eat, disciplined about working out, disciplined about their finances, but also disciplined in that when they get with you and they really like you and they're committed. End of story. That discipline runs through the sex as well. So that's something that I think is missing. And I also think it's also, I think it's very, what's the word? I think it's dishonorable to like say to men, you can't control yourself. Like, what are they, babies? No, these are grown men. These are grown men who are virtuous in many respects and who have their lives together in a really admirable way. I'm not going to be somebody that says, oh, but when it comes to sex, they just can't control themselves. That's silly. Of course they can. And if they can't control themselves, by the way, they're not disciplined. So they need to go work on that and figure out what's broken in the machine. Because if you can be super disciplined about every other aspect of your life, but not that one, that tells me that you're just choosing not to be disciplined about that one. You're making an elective choice for whatever reason not to be disciplined about that, but don't act like you have no control. You can't expect women to admire you for the discipline you hold in other areas and then suddenly be okay with that discipline being absent when it comes to being monogamous with them. It just doesn't make sense to me. It's contradictory in many ways. Tyler.
Got a few here I want to run through really quick. Ray Studios gave $2, said this midterm proves why we need a national divorce. Brad gave $10. Benita Arndt, The Sex Diaries. You're missing the reason that some women look the other way when their man steps out. 9 in 10 women stop wanting to be intimate with their partner. And R. Payne gave $10, said, I agree with women that their guy is faithful, HVM or not. But she should also state that she is willing to fulfill his needs within reason. By the way, modern women cheat on par with men.
Yeah, the cheating is bad across the board. I mean, if you enter a contract with somebody as a man or a woman, you got to stay true to your contract, right? So I don't care if it's a woman doing the dirty or a guy doing the dirty. But I think the reason I'm focusing on the guys in this respect is just because of the discipline argument that so many in the red pill, the manosphere, you know, the alpha men will talk about. And I'm like reminding them like, hey, you're disciplined and you're in control of it all. So that's just a little excuse you got going on over here. And by the way, the point of women not wanting to have sex, I saw a great video from Cruces and I was going to use it today and I didn't. I'm going to save that one. But there's a great video about how women and men approach sex and why there's like this disconnect leading to a lack of sexual intimacy, particularly among married couples, which is a huge issue. You can't just wake up one day and decide you're not going to have sex. I mean, it's not healthy. And it's also going to break the bonds of that relationship. So we'll get to that one. I'm going to bring that one back. Let's talk about dating apps for a second, because this is another big one that gets talked about a lot. Let's play this video, this TikTok.
39 people she's talking to on a dating app.
See, the only thing that I run into when it comes to that is that you started this 3 days ago. 2 days ago. Do you realize, like, for guys, we have to wait, like, weeks to get, like, likes, let alone a person that we are interested in to, like, even send us a like, let alone when we send them a like, for them to accept it? We're, like, shooting a basketball in the dark backwards and hoping that it lands in a goal that's almost smaller than the actual ball.
Yeah, so this is important because I think it sums up a lot of the frustration that men in the, you know, dating marketplace are feeling. And it's 100% accurate. I mean, women don't realize how hard it is for these guys to get even a fraction of the amount of attention that women get. It's very easy for women to get male attention, particularly in the online age, with Instagram being what it is, social media being what it is, dating apps being what they are. And it's also very easy for a woman who is, say, actually a 5 to very quickly upgrade herself via photographs, via outfit, via makeup, via hair, to like a 7 or an 8. We see it happen all the time. Now, when you actually get on that date, she might look very different than her pictures. But regardless, to get those clicks, to get those swipes, to get those follows, much, much, much easier for women than men. So I don't think women realize the struggle in terms of the discrepancy that, you know, you've got guys out there that are just waiting hours and hours and hours, sometimes for one like, for one swipe, for one click. And you've got these women that are just turning away. You know, oh, he's not this, he's not that. And there's a huge discrepancy there that I think it would behoove women to kind of just acknowledge and understand some of that struggle. And also, you know, women are picky. They're very, very, very picky. Guys aren't, women are even picky about themselves and about other women, right? So if you have a guy that has like his phone and he pulls up an Instagram picture of a girl and he looks at her and he's like, oh, she's hot. That's it. She's hot. That's enough. I guarantee you, if he shows that image to women around him, say, I'm going to make it relatives because otherwise it complicates the matter. Say he shows his sister, his, you know, cousin, whoever, and they take a look at the photo. Watch how those women react. Oh, she's all right. I mean, I wouldn't say hot. Well, she's a little oh, what is that? Ooh, is that her? Those are hair extensions. That's not even real. That's her eyelash. Her eyelash is weird. Well, you know, blowing it up. So that's a huge discrepancy too, because women are very, very picky. They're very hard on other women. They're very hard on themselves. They're very hard on guys. Very, very hard on guys. They're looking at the pictures and they're going, oh, I don't know about that, this, that, and the other thing. Oh, I don't do mustaches. No, no, no. Can't do it. Oh, his hair's too short. Oh, 5'8". I mean, it's like, this is how they behave. And guys are just like, oh, she's hot. Oh, look, she's hot. Oh, she's hot. She's hot too. She's not as hot, but still hot. That's the extent of how the male mind, they just see, it's like, oh yeah, she's pretty, 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 pretty. And on the other side, you got women being like, oh, he's too short. Oh, I don't know. His mustache is crooked. I don't know if I could do a beard. His eyes, are they hazel? Oh, I prefer blue. I don't know. His hair is weird. All that. So we, you know, acknowledge that reality. And that is one of the reasons why you have an epidemic of guys who aren't having sex, who aren't getting dates, who are incredibly frustrated. And as a result, they're turning to outlets that aren't good for them. They're turning to, you know, the pornography. They're turning to, you know, the video games. They're turning to the metaverse. They're turning to sitting alone at home and eating a big bag of cheese doodles on the couch because they can't get any traction. And what I always say to those guys is, you got to work on you. You got to get yourself together. You got to understand this is the reality of the way the marketplace works when it comes to women and men. It just is. You don't have to like it. It just is. It's much easier for women to get those clicks and those likes. So you got to be at the top of your game and do the best you can to get there. And if you're lacking in one area, you're going to have to make up for it in another. You may not like to hear that, but it is a reality that if you want to get the attention that you want from women, you got to be at the top. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be. There's certain things you can't control. You know, you're not 6 feet tall. You're not going to just, you know, I don't know, put on stilts every day. But you don't have to, because there's other things you can do. You can get in shape. You can, you know, eat really well, take care of yourself. You can focus on your business. You can be, you know, hardworking and ambitious. You can, you know, have a value system that's fantastic, that becomes admirable when somebody says, oh, I want a long-term partner, and you're somebody who's trustworthy and kind. And there's plenty that you can do to make up for the things that maybe, you know, a woman might find at the peak of attraction in one category. But you got to work at it. And that just, it's a reality. It just, it's not so easy to be a dude. It's not. Okay. Drew Afualo. Oh, yes. Let's talk about body positivity and what that means. Let's play that clip.
Body neutrality works for me because it's just, it doesn't matter. Because it doesn't matter what it looks like. It shouldn't determine how you're treated. Is the whole point for me. So if you love your body, that's great. If you love it and you worship it, awesome. I think that's awesome. Mm-hmm. But if also you don't want to care about it at all, literally, that's also great.
Yeah, I think the thing when there was like, your body is a temple. I'm like, my body is a Chick-fil-A.
Okay, that's funny.
Body neutrality.
You heard that joke. She says, oh, some people say my body's a temple. And she says, my body is a Chick-fil-A. We can all laugh at that. When you really think about it, is it funny? Now, where is she right? She's right that you're a free citizen and you should be able to abuse or take care of your body in any way you see fit. That is up to you. It's gonna be up to you to do better or do worse. And we wouldn't want a society where anyone was making those decisions for your body except you. So that part she's right about. But I don't think we should live in the dark and not acknowledge that there is a physical health impact to that. Meaning if you're obese, there is a health impact to that. We shouldn't glorify obesity and we shouldn't pretend that it's not a precursor or a contributor to disease. We have to acknowledge that. We also shouldn't ignore the connection between your physical health and your mental health. And we know that when you exercise and those endorphins flow and you get in shape, it feels good because there's a chemical reaction that happens in the body. And there's an emotional reaction that happens in the body. And we know that there are less cases of depression and anxiety in people who are taking care of their physical body. We know that there is a correlation there between anxiety and depression and physical health. Not just whether you're skinny or fat, but what you eat, what you're putting into your body, do you exercise, all of it, all of those components. So we can't just ignore it. And as a society, I think it's incredibly dangerous to ignore that reality. And oftentimes I see with respect to children, and obese children, people are afraid to talk about it. It's like, oh, it's a kid. Obesity in children is horrible. It's horrible. I really think it's borderline child abuse if parents don't do something about it. You know, you see, sometimes I'll see a kid who's grossly overweight. They're struggling as a child to even walk from one side of the grocery store to the other. They're kind of like, they're noticeably, and I'm not talking about baby. I'm talking about, you know, an 8-year-old. They're obese. They're unhealthy. And they've got, you know, a donut in one hand and something, you know, a cupcake in the other, or a big slice of bread in the other. And you say, why? You know, that is the responsibility of that parent to do something about it, because it is not in the best interest of that child to be overweight. So I think there's a difference between saying, oh, do whatever you want. You know, your body is yours. Sure. But as a society, why are we glamorizing obesity? Why are we not being honest about the risks? And why are we not talking about the reality that it feels good to take care of yourself emotionally, physically? It's a good feeling. Everybody knows they hop on that spin bike for an hour, even if you don't want to do it at first. And believe me, I have days like that. You hop on, you make it happen. You feel better afterward. Sweating is detoxification for the body. All of this stuff matters in terms of how you feel physically and emotionally. So if we're not talking about that, I ask why. Well, that's an easy answer. We can go back to section one of today's show and talk about how the powers that be would love for you to be obese and unhealthy, because then you're more drug dependent. There's a cash in for big pharma. Then you're more dependent on the state because you're going to be less able to take care of yourself. A sick population is less able to take care of itself. That is the goal of the system, right? We know that. So it's up to you to say, I want to be in the best shape for myself, for my family, for my children, for my nieces and nephews, for all of it. Okay. This was a clip from Andrew Tate that I found really interesting. We have two more I want to do today. I thought this was really interesting. It's a side of Tate that people don't see a lot. This, even though it's kind, and he's very well-intentioned in this clip, and it's about love and falling in love, this clip will drive the feminists wild. They'll be foaming at the mouth. So listen to it and see if you can figure out why this will drive certain women crazy. And then, Tyler, I'm going to come to you. If there's any more super chats, get on in there. I'm going to come to Tyler right after this clip.
Being in love as a man is absolutely or not really one of the best human experiences. It doesn't matter how many girls you've had or how long you've been around, every once in a while you'll meet one and you'll like her more than the rest. And being in love with her is a fun thing. You get to show her the world, you get to explore her innocence by giving her brand new experiences. Perhaps she's never been to this particular club or been in a car this fast or been to this country. A real G isn't stingy with women, and he's certainly not negative towards women. He's absolutely the opposite. You can take her places, you can teach her things, you can be her guider and protector, and you can benefit from her femininity in return. Being in love is absolutely not the abusive thing. Being in love.
Okay, so that, you see he's talking about being in love. Now, I don't know, in the chat, did that rub you wrong? Did you get upset about that? My guess is that you will see a lot of modern feminists who will listen to this and they'll be peeved, they'll be agitated because they'll hear Andrew Tate talking about a woman's innocence. And that's immediately a knee-jerk reaction, right? The feminists tell you you have to have a knee-jerk reaction. Well, I'm not that innocent. I'm worldly just like you. That is the reflex reaction they want you to have. They want you to listen to a guy like Andrew Tate talk about, I can show you new things that you haven't seen yet. That knee-jerk reaction they want from a female is, well, I don't need you to show me. I can show myself, or maybe I'll show you. That is how women are being brought up today. When in reality, what this guy is saying is actually quite nice. He's saying that as a guy, he wants to be able to have this woman that he's in love with and show her things that will make her smile. That he wants to be able to be that leader and be like, I'm going to take her on a trip that's going to make her, you know, her eyes sparkle. And she's going to get that big old smile on her face. And I'm going to get a big old smile on my face watching her smile. And that's something that I think is misunderstood about men. I think because men are intrinsically leaders and protectors, I think they really get an incredible amount of joy from showing women new things, new places. If they can pay for something and they can take you on that beautiful trip and you can be there with them, that makes them happy. That's a good thing. That's what you want. What you don't want is that knee-jerk reaction from modern feminists to be like, well, we don't need you to do that. We can do that for ourselves. That's ridiculous. Why not just be happy that somebody's there loving you and wanting you to be happy and wanting them to be the reason that you're happy in that moment because they're bringing you something that you didn't have before. That's what love is supposed to be, right? So I don't have that reaction, but I guarantee you there will be that reaction of people who will have, there's people who just have a really hard time in the modern world with the dynamic of guys wanting to lead. It's like counterintuitive, you know? Women say, well, why does the guy have to be the leader? Why does he have to be showing me new things? Why does he have to be the one who opens my eyes, you know? And it's just, they just enjoy it. It makes them happy. And I say this as someone I married, and I know even for my husband, if he shows me something new, or if he's able to, you know, take me on a beautiful trip, or he's able to do something special for me that I've never done before and never seen before and never experienced before, I see his face when he sees my face, and that makes him happy. But I'm telling you, man, the way we're getting to be divided, it's that the modern world wants women to resent guys for wanting to do these things for them, which will, of course, force this separation. It's wild to me. I don't know, Tyler, let me ask you. Do you feel like what Tate is saying is in any way, like as a guy, you hear what he's saying, like, I value your innocence and I want to like show you this new stuff, this new world, this new this. Does that, how does that sit with you?
Well, it certainly doesn't anger me or upset me. As a guy who's basically been married since I was 18, I kind of get it. Like, I've been in the same relationship since I was 18 years old with Tori, so I get it. I mean, it doesn't upset me, but I see your point of like why feminists would get mad and say we're not just these innocent little creatures that don't know anything about the world, da 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 da.
What do you think it is though about the word innocence that I'm trying to figure out? Are they bothered by it because they have the high body counts now, they're not so innocent, there's like they're self-conscious about it, or is it just that they feel like a child?
Yes, I think they equate it to naivete or ignorance or something, like they put a negative connotation behind it, and that's not how it's meant to be, obviously. I think it's they take it as though we find them to be childish or naive or what have you. not to say, well, let me, let me show you this thing you've never done before. Maybe you've never shot a bow before. Maybe you've never been in a fast car. Maybe you've never been fishing, like whatever it may be, right? Yeah. Exploring that other side and introducing her to something new and seeing, as he says, how she lights up.
Those are the words, right? The code words. Innocence. I think submissive is another one where, you know, people, like, their horns come out and they're like, what did you just say? And it's crazy to me that, like, innocence is beautiful in many respects, you know, and that doesn't mean that you've never done anything in your life. And by the way, it also doesn't mean that that guy thinks that you bring nothing to the table that he can learn from. Because I remember in that very interview, Tate, I think it was, and Morgan, he says, like, in terms of decision making, there's some things that you're going to know more about. There's some things that I'm going to know more about. So there is give and take in the relationship dynamic that a lot of these guys, not all of them, are talking about. But there is something unique about male leadership in a relationship that's now frowned upon that shouldn't be. And that can be very, very, very beautiful. And there is something uniquely beautiful about female innocence as well that I think now gets a bad name for no reason. Well, actually, we know for good reason, because they need to break down the family and break down couples. We talked about all that, you know. Okay, chat? Anything in the chat?
Yeah. Omega gave another $5. Said, I say get your passport. Western women are too far gone by modernity. I am dating a Brazilian and we are doing good. I can't do it anymore. Thoughts?
Yeah, that's something we hear a lot, actually. I get a lot of messages from guys saying that it's just like an American women issue, and that it's like everywhere else, women are just not offended by this, at this stuff, most of this content. Like, they'd just be like, okay, cool. You know, that they're content to kind of do what comes naturally to them. And my husband and I talk about this all the time. He would actually be a great guest. You would love to hear from him. I know you want to know all my dirty secrets. I know. But we talk about this stuff all the time. And he'll say, like, in an ideal world, like, what would you do at home? Would you work? And, like, you'd be surprised in a conversation like that what the responses are from women and men, and, like, how often we kind of adhere to what's intrinsic to ourselves. Like, the nurturing part of me is what I draw myself to most easily in every situation. It's really fascinating, this gender, you know, dynamics. I want to do one more, and then we're going to come to the chat one last time before end of show. This was a tweet that I saw. terrible, but it's on point of what we're saying. So this says, here's some bad news. This isn't low quality. This is an average city girl today. The sheer numbers a girl can do in a large city on an app is staggering. And remember this, you'll never know unless she tells you. Now, what is he responding to? This, a 26-year-old woman posted her Tinder statistics on Reddit. 37 sexual partners in half a year. 37 in half a year. That's half a year. What are you looking at? Like 70? I mean, and look at the picture. That's how Tinder works. I've never been on Tinder, but it says here 26, gender female. And you see the map. I guess these are all the matches and the right swipes and the, oh my Lord. You know what I see when I look at this? What has happened to culture? Do I have anyone of age in the chat that remembers when you wanted to date somebody? You went out with your friends and you mingled and you had conversations with people and it was like, can I get your number? And maybe you gave somebody the wrong number because you didn't want to give them your number, or you had to give them your home phone number, and then you had to think about, oh my gosh, is my dad going to answer the phone? How's that going to go? Do I want to do that? You made plans and you went out, you went to like a diner, or you went to a movie and got some food, and it was just like you got to know somebody in a normal way. Face-to-face, eye contact, conversation. What the hell is this Tinder stuff? This is crazy. Talk about incentivizing promiscuity. And this is supposed to be like a badge of honor now? So you meet a woman. By the way, guys, you meet a woman. You're not going to know all this. He's right. But you meet a woman, and let's say she was upfront with you. Let's say you meet a girl and you know that she has been with, what was it, 37 sexual partners in half a year. You're supposed to find that attractive now in some way? The fact that she, how selective could you have been, honey? You're going to tell me all of those 37 partners meant something to you? No, they didn't. How many of them did? Why were you so comfortable being with a guy you didn't know? This is somehow supposed to be attractive to men, or they're supposed to just ignore it? Why? If we're talking about how guys value the beauty of innocence and value purity, and that just is, whether you like it or not, it just is, What do you think a guy's thinking when you've been with 37 people in half a year? I mean, this is not rocket science. More importantly than what that guy thinks of you, what is going on with you, honey? Why are you doing that? Why have you detached sex from emotion to such an extent that you're now doing this on Tinder? This is like a hobby? Booty calling and all that? Come on, man. This is not a path to happiness for women. This is not a path to success for women. This is a doomsday situation for girls. This is going to lead to a lot of female tears, a lot of female unhappiness, and a lot of females being afraid, like we saw in an earlier clip, to say that they're embarrassed by this behavior, but knowing damn well that they are. This is not, by the way, this sleeping around, swiping right, 37 sexual partners in half a year, this is not intrinsic to women. It's not. This is not natural for women to be doing. It's not. This is 2022 society telling women it's cool. So they're doing it. They're trying to find that happiness and they are miserable. They are miserable. By the way, guys too, I mean, I understand you're not supposed to care about a guy's body count and all that. And most women don't care about a guy's, I don't care about that stuff personally. But also, why are the numbers getting this high? I mean, you're sporting a body count of like 100 a year. Ooh, that's a little too much. I mean, there's something called STDs. There's stuff out there. Also, like just a little bit of like, these numbers are just really high. 37? Is that, well, you're young.
Take that. Somebody made a really good point here. She's 26. Let's say she keeps up these numbers till she's 36. That's 740 people. 740 people. Let's say she does half that. It's 370. Let's say she does a quarter of it. It's 150 people. That's absurd. That's too much wiener.
It's too much eggplant.
So too much.
Too much eggplant is not good for you. It's not. I don't mind, you know, too much eggplant from one guy. Like you found your guy and you're, you know, I'm all for sex, right? When it's like in that situation, but spreading yourself thin, like there's something wrong society. You can't tell me that there's not something wrong with our society, that you've got women in their early to mid 20s stacking up numbers like more than 30 in half a year. I mean, and honestly, men too, guys. What is going on? Sexual discipline, guys, and women just my, you know how many women though I have met in my life? I have to say, now that I thought about it and I looked back, I worked as a waitress. We're gonna close out with this. I worked as a waitress for a period of time and there were several girls in that bar that were like just doing this stuff. Oh, I went home with this guy and I woke up this morning, I didn't even know his name. I would hear stories like that. And I would just be like, what? Why though? What did you get out of it? And you know, 9 out of 10 times, nothing. They don't feel good physically because they're not connected to them emotionally, so they're not even having a good time. They don't feel good emotionally the next day. They will often talk about how they feel empty inside. So the why, is it just now that this is the norm? Are you competing with other women? Are you trying to fit in with what 2022 says is an empowered woman? What is the motivation why you are getting these body counts up to a point where a 26-year-old woman has 37 sexual partners in half a year? Boom. Okay, last check-in. Do we have any more check-in on the chat?
Yeah.
And then we'll end.
Silly Sausage gave $5. Said in the politest way possible, that lady must be tearing up the floorboards looking for pipe.
It's crazy. I can't relate to it. You know what? And I say, people say, "Well, you're old now, Jen. You're old." Okay, I'm married. I have a child. Fine. But like, I struggled with this then. I worked as a waitress at 24. So I would hear these conversations at 24 and I would go home and I would tell my two best friends, oh my God, these women are just like sleeping with everybody. They don't care. Oh, I just couldn't even, I don't know. This is why I needed to move from New York City to a nice small town. End of story. Where have all the cowboys gone? You don't have to come full circle on that one, Tyler. All right. We good?
Real quick.
Yeah.
Which cracks first? You have men that don't want to sleep with women because they've got a high body count. Or you have women that can't get any more good men because they've slept with too many people. Who cracks first? Do the men cave to the women who have had sex with 40 different men? Or do the women now tell the next generation, knock this off because I'm now 45 and can't get a man?
No, I think the men cave to the women, but in large part what you're probably going to have is a delayed period where guys are just going to sleep with girls they don't care about, and then everyone's going to get married later. And ultimately that's going to be a problem for women. And you're going to have a bigger fertility crisis than what we have right now. We got a fertility crisis for many reasons. We have a fertility crisis because everybody eats garbage food. We're exposed to a ton of chemicals. We don't detox the body. Everybody's, you know, obese. The obesity rates in this country are horrific. Everybody's eating fast food, all that. Deeply, deeply unhealthy society in many ways. So we have a fertility crisis because of that. And we also have a fertility crisis because women are waiting, skipping that whole period where they're at maximum fertility. And they're waiting, and not everybody gets lucky. Like, not everybody's going to pop out a baby at 40. And it gets harder and harder and harder. And then you've got the freeze your eggs campaign, which, by the way, when you freeze your eggs, everybody says, oh, just freeze your egg. That's, like, a very challenging process. I did not do it myself, but I have friends who did it. It involves hormone injections. It involves – there's a lot that goes into that. It's not just, like, in and out, and it shouldn't be treated lightly. So you're going to have a delay of all of those things, and – man, and you're also going to have much less people forming that happy marriage and much less people having kids. It's a mess, y'all. It is a mess. It's a big mess. I'm glad I'm not 23 right now is all I'm going to say, because whew, those of you who are 23, don't worry. We're gonna give you advice on this show that's going to help you navigate the chaos. So don't feel lost. We're here for you. All right, I'm going to be back. I don't know what this week's going to hold. I have my parents here, so I'll let you know. But I'll be back this week, either Wednesday or Friday. Hit that subscribe button for me. Hit that like button for me. Make sure you show some love. And also leave some comments in the comment section so I know. I check the comments sometimes. Every now and then I'll scroll in, make sure you're, you know, saying what you got to say. So hit, put a comment in there and I'll see it. And I may even pull some comments for the show. I may see something in there that's, you know, piques my interest, and I may pull it for the show and put it up. So always make your thoughts known. Thank you for being here today, and I'll see you soon. Bye.